Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in giving a warm welcome to Mr. Antonio Horta Osario.
Thank you very much for your introduction, and good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. So I thought that I would say a few comments about the global economy, how it is going. Obviously very important to see how the UK economy will go. And in the end, a few thoughts about the UK's position in the new world order. And starting with the global economy, as you know, the world economy post the crisis, as you see in the graph, has been growing in a healthy way. The world projections for growth this year have been upgraded recently by the IMF and other institutions. And the prospects are good, economically speaking. Both the US, the EU, and China are all growing, which is also important in terms of diversification. What is a bit surprising, if you look at the graph, and the red line represents trade, is that trade, for the first time in many years, is growing less than GDP. And as we all know, trade drives GDP. Trade is a source of wealth creation. And so this is a bit worrying. And we have been signs of growing protectionism around the world. Look, for example, at the 220% tax that Bombardier suffered to protect Boeing, for example. WTO appointments from the US not being done, NAFTA being renegotiated. So there is a worrying trend about trade in the world that I wanted to call the attention to, because trade is a big source of wealth creation. When we look at this in a longer time period, and you have here the dark bar represents the advanced economies, the red bar represents the developing economies, and the blue-gray bar represents trade. And you can see that apart from the middle part of the chart, where with the two world wars we had, trade grew significantly less in the period from 1913 to 1950 than GDP, both in advanced economies and in the developing world, you can see that trade had been growing always above GDP. You can also see that the green bar, so the advanced economies' GDP growth, had been leading world growth until the 1950s. From the 1950s until 2010, advanced economies have been outpaced by the emerging economies, given that the red is basically the green plus the emerging economies, and trade was growing at 5% a year. So now, for the last 7 years, the advanced economies have been growing less, and that is also fostering the protectionism trend, because if the developed world is growing less and it is the developed world that imports a lot from emerging economies, the fact that those countries are growing less increases the problem of protectionism, and therefore trade has only been growing at 2% a year for the past 7 years. Well, this raises the issue of why is protectionism growing, and also the issue of the other face of trade, which is inequality. Because if trade, along with innovation, increases wealth for nations, it is very important, that is an average, it is very important that the wealth creation is properly redistributed. And if you look at this graph, which is from Branko Milanović, and it's called the elephant chart, this graph shows over 1988 until 2008, so over a 20-year period, what happened to the wealth creation in the world. And in the horizontal axis, you have the percentiles of wealth of each person in the world. So you have the first 15%, 20%. So on the horizontal axis, you go from people with more wealth, less wealth, to more wealth. And on the vertical axis, you see how many each percentile has increased its wealth over the last 20 years on that period. And what happens here, it's really important. You see that the lowest 70% of people in the world have increased their wealth by 70%, 70, over those 20 years. These people are especially the people that got out of poverty in India, in China, in Russia, in Brazil, so they are in the developing economies. And then you have, from 70% to 95%, people that had their income slightly up or zero. And these are mostly people in the developed economies, so in the US, in Europe, in the UK. And then you have the last 2 or 3%, which wealth increased massively as well. And this has increased inequality around the world, not only between percentiles, but especially between developed economies and emerging economies, which is fueling as well the problem of protectionism on trade. Apart from this, how is growth going to come in the future? So we have this protectionism trend, we have the inequality issue tied to it, we have to redistribute better what is being created to avoid populism and to have a better sense of equality. But the big question is the pie going to increase further? So is the world GDP going to grow at a healthy pace? Or shall we have to redistribute from a pie that is either stable or not growing a lot? And there are some important factors for the future which are a bit of headwinds to the world growth. The first one being aging populations in the world. So you see here several countries and how much the working age population is developing. And we have less and less people working for retired people. So it's obviously fantastic and we should celebrate that we have people living longer. But if people are living longer and we have less people working, obviously the productivity, the output per person is decreasing because fewer people are working in the world. And at the same time, as aging population retire, if they have not saved enough for their future, there would be obviously higher taxes in the future in terms of, are people saving enough today in a low interest rate environment in order to have the incomes they need when they get to retirement? This is a very significant problem. So, and this is basically happening in the developed economies. What would be the solution for this? The obvious economic solution, and I am not a macroeconomist, would be to allow immigration. But we all know the political problems that immigration raises without the proper policies. Second problem that we have, the commitments with pension obligations, especially in the developed world. And I put you here the graph on your left, where both the US and Germany have a 2% percentage of GDP commitment of pension obligations increase for the next 20 years, is a very significant burden. The United Kingdom is in a better position there, at less than 1%. And on the right side of the graph, if we have older population living longer, we also have rising healthcare costs. And on the right, you have the increase in public healthcare spending by 2060, so in the next 40 years, with cost containment in green or without, with cost pressure in red. And you can see that in either case, healthcare cost pressures will be between 2 and 6% in real terms over the next 40 years in the OECD. So we have two quite significant headwinds in terms of growth of the pie going forward. And then we can come to the question, okay, so if we have less people working, if we have significant cost obligations for the future, can productivity increase and therefore productivity, each person producing more, offset these headwinds? And this is the question that economists have not been able to answer until now. As you see in the graph, And apart from the impact of German reunification, which had a very significant impact on productivity, given Germany is a large economy and they absorbed the East in a quite well-done way, you can see that productivity in the world that was growing at around 1% is now going down and approaching zero. That is a world problem. It is also a UK problem. We have record numbers of employment, as announced yesterday in the UK. Our unemployment has never been so low since 1975, but the output per worker, surprisingly, is not increasing a lot. So this is a question which is really important, because it will make redistribution harder if we don't improve productivity, i.e. output per person. And finally, and this might surprise some of you, we have an important headwind in terms of the debt levels in the world. Following the financial crisis, governments across the world, and especially in the developed world, had to implement austerity, given what happened. We all think that that austerity, which is now being eased, had decreased the debt in the economy, but the debt in the economy has been growing even since the financial crisis. So if you see the graph on your left, the dark line is the world debt, the public sector debt of the world since 2000 till today. It was going down until the financial crisis. Then governments had to massive intervene in the economies, given that there was a private sector collapse. The debt increased to 80%, and it is now above 80% on the public debt side. And when we go to the non-public sector, so the total non-financial sector debt, also the dark line shows you that the debt is increasing. The UK in both graphs is the red line. So the UK has very high public sector debt and also high non-financial sector debt, which is more in households and less in corporates. And on the dotted line, which is the developing countries, you can see that the developing countries are also increasing their debt. So, basic point, the debt over GDP is still increasing. Interest rates are now rising in the world. This will increase the cost of serving these debts. And I would like to highlight as a final point on this slide the example of Germany. Germany is the purple line. You can see that Germany's public sector debt over GDP is now declining. And you can also see that Germany's private sector debt is now below the developing countries line. So the Germans have been setting an example of living within their means and reducing the debt of the country as a whole. Now, second part of my presentation. What's the UK's current position in the new world order? First, let's start with trade. So as you see in the graph, and as you all know, we mainly trade with the European Union. Close to 50% of our exports and imports are done with European Union countries. And our second biggest partner is the US, and then China with 5%. What does this mean? There were lots of empirical studies about this. It shows that trade is normally done with countries closer to you, either culturally or physically closer. And lots of studies show that the further away countries are, the more difficult trade is. And I would like to highlight here that given that we trade 50% with the European Union and our next trading partners are the US with 15% and China with 5%, for each 1% of trade that we decrease our trade with the EU, each 1%, we would have to increase trade with the US by 3%. And if you think about China, who's growing a lot, each 1% of less trade with the European Union, we will have to grow 9% more with China just to stand still. So this means how important the agreement with the European Union is, given the sheer size of our interconnection and trade dependence of the European Union. And when we go and see foreign direct investment, the UK is in a privileged position the UK is the third largest destiny of foreign direct investment in the world after the US and China. And as you can see in the graph, the biggest investors in the UK are the EU with £4 trillion and the US with £3 trillion. Most of these investments, by the way, are in the services sector, not in the manufacturing sector. Services are not including in WTO rules. 8 of 10 UK workers work in services. So it is really important, as the trade agreement, it is really important to really discuss and have a good agreement on the investment chapter of any free trade agreement, given that quotas and tariffs are as important as rules on trade. And now, relating to our net position with the world in terms of external assets. Do we as a country own more foreign assets out of which we receive income, or do foreigners own more assets in the UK out of which we pay, they receive income? And as you can see on the left side of the slide, our position has been going negative, significantly negative, in the last few years, has improved very significantly in the last 2 years, and this is not only due to foreign direct investment movements, but because our assets are denominated in foreign currencies and our liabilities are denominated in pounds. So given the very significant depreciation of the pound in the last 2 years following the referendum, our net position with the world has improved massively because we have the debts in pounds and we have the assets in foreign currencies. This is a position that many few countries have in the world. And as you can see in the right side of the graph, the green is the income that we receive from foreign assets, the red is what we pay from foreign-owned assets in the UK, and the dark line is the net position. You can see that as a result of our foreign assets having increased with the pound's devaluation, the green line is starting to increase, so we should expect some positive impact from our foreign assets bringing more income in pounds, helping the situation of the country given the devaluation. And finally, when we look as well of how much does the world use the pound as a reserve currency, and again here the UK is in a very, very positive situation. If you look at global GDP and international foreign exchange reserves, and we should expect larger countries to have larger foreign exchange reserves because they have larger trade, you can see that the US dollar is by far the most used currency in the world. It has almost 2.5 times the natural weight of the GDP of the US in the world. But the second one, surprisingly, is the UK. So people hold the pound to the size of the UK GDP in the world being the second biggest percentage, outweighing the European Union. So the European Union usage of the euro versus the GDP of Europe is less than one. The Japanese yen, which is as big as an economy as the UK, is less than half. And the Chinese are just starting to try to introduce the renminbi in foreign exchange reserves. So we face some challenges as an economy, as I showed in the first part of our presentation, but we have an exceptional position in the world economy. And this chart, this is driven by tradition, by the fact that we are a country that respects the rule of law, by the fact that we are the center of international capital, and we are very credit worth. So really important position and a very positive position in the world economy. So as a final slide, what will the future mean of different to what it is today? And you know that predictions are obviously difficult, especially about the future. But in only 13 years' time, so in 2030, which is very close in our professional careers, China will be by far the largest economy in the world. And this is in nominal terms. This is not in purchasing power terms. This is in nominal terms. China will grow from the third largest economy in the world, in black, to the largest, above $25 trillion at nominal rates, outpacing the US and outpacing the EU. The EU is in dark. With the UK, the EU would be today the second largest bloc. Without the UK, it becomes the third. The EU will still be the third bloc in 13 years' time. India will become much bigger, and the UK is represented in the last part. So what does this mean, basically? Apart from showing the rise of China, this means very clearly to me, and we are a large, open economy, that there will be three main trading blocs in the world: China, the US, and Europe. And for us to keep the privileged position we have been seeing, we have to think ahead, and we have to decide today what type of future standards, non-tariff barriers, number one, and second, relationship we want to have with these three main blocks. It is our relationship with China, the EU, and the US, I repeat, being us, a large open economy, that will depend our future prosperity in this new world order. Thank you very much.